your health with Dr. Burns. This is Dr. Burns, and welcome to Here's to Your Health. We have a special guest today. Her name's Elsa, and from Kitty Corner. So, Elsa, what are some things that you've learned about between eating good food and bad food? What should you be eating?
Bananas. Oranges.
Okay, what else?
Peaches.
Okay, so now are we supposed to be eating good food or bad food?
Good food.
What happens if you eat bad food?
Then we get sick and want to hurt a little bit.
Okay, so then if we want to have energy, if kids want to have energy and be able to play, then what are we supposed to do?
Good food.
Okay, all right, thank you. So, and that is from Kitty Corner with Elsa. All right. Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in. I am very excited today. I have Bob Grant with me. How are you doing today, Bob?
I'm good. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, me too. I was, how I actually got to know you a bit was I was actually doing some research, and I found your book, The Women Men Adore and Never Want to Leave. And I downloaded your book, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is like an amazing book. You know, it's like, how come, a lot of this that you teach in here wasn't taught to me when I was growing up as a teenager? Mm-hmm. I'm like, Mom and Dad, why didn't you tell me this stuff? But I think it's amazing. You've been an actual, licensed professional counselor and a relationship coach for over 22 years. And so I would consider you to be an expert in this field with relationships.
Yeah, I would. As much as I've done, I think I've got a pretty good idea of what works and doesn't work. Especially from working with clients, because they usually are the ones that have given me the feedback over the years. And after a while, mm-hmm. I've just been able to see patterns that work and didn't work.
Okay. So, well, that's awesome. So what made you get into specifically like relationship coaching? So what was the thing that narrowed down your niche for you?
When I became a counselor out of graduate school, more than anything else, what I really wanted to do was to have an impact on families, because I had just seen so much. I had done some work with youth in college, and I had saw a lot of families that went through divorce, and it was the children, the teenagers. And I got interested in that, and then as I became a counselor, I found that women, more so than men, were the ones that were coming to see me. And sometimes the men wouldn't come at all. And what I ended up realizing is that to make changes for them, if we just wait till the man is involved, it might not ever happen. But if just the women made some changes, a lot of times they end up having an impact on the man, whether he wanted to be impacted or not, which actually ended up, affecting the family as well.
Nice. So, yeah, I know that with some of this, with the changes, people are just like, it's too hard, I can't do it. So how do you get people like past that point?
Yeah, usually if we can come up with a goal that means something to someone, what I'm asking is, I say, what is it we want to accomplish? Not necessarily to be too clinical, but tell me the dream that's in your heart. When you were little, what did you dream about? I mean, I'm assuming there's a type of relationship you wanted. And what I tell a lot of folks, and mostly women, I said, that dream is possible. Now, what's probably not possible is for you just to be able to do one thing or say two sentences and have that fall in place. But it's easier than what you think. So if we pick, the goal, or you tell me what's really in your heart, and someone, believes that can happen, then, the hard part is more just sticking with it, that it's powerful, it's magical, that, as a woman, you really can have that hypnotic effect on men. It doesn't take a lifetime to learn, but it does take more than a couple weeks, and mainly it's a willingness to practice and to experiment. And along the way is that you should see changes, you know, as you go about doing this. It doesn't, you know, work where all of a sudden you do all this work for 6 months, nothing happens, and all of a sudden one day it hits. No, you see progress as you go along, and most of the time that progress is going to seem a little different, a little odd. It's not going to feel familiar. And the real goal is just to keep someone, you know, progressing with that, even though it doesn't come about specifically the way they thought it should come about or the way they thought it would come.
Gotcha. So now part of this is you're saying that they need to listen to their heart. What does that mean?
If I'm talking to a woman, the analogy I use is, you know, imagine there's a little girl, you know, that you end up talking to. It's an example, of course. We can talk about your heart, or we can talk about it's really the back of your head. It's that metaphor for that deep feeling, that core part of us that we all have. And, you know, the inner child was what tried to describe this years ago, because that was a really good picture for folks to see. And most of the time, your heart speaks to you through your feelings. And what happens a lot of times, especially with women, is they've been told not to complain, not to whine, not to be weak. And so they it's not that they don't feel stuff, but they don't express their feelings, and they don't listen to them because they don't want to come across as weak or needy. Then what happens is those things build up, those feelings, that intensity builds up. And then when they do express feelings, it's either really intense, really angry, or they just swallow them. And they end up, you know, trying to think a lot and do a lot of stuff intellectually because that feels more in control. And so the paradox of it is I say, you know, imagine if you treated your heart the way you do, you know, the way you would, like a six-year-old, you know, just a stranger, a little six-year-old girl. And my guess is you're probably far harsher on your heart than you would be some six-year-old. You know, I tell them some of it, I say, here, you could use my daughter, let's pretend. I think you'd be nicer to her than you would your own heart.
Yep, that's probably true. So, and then all of a sudden, like when you're saying that, like with a, you know, as we were growing up, I'm just like, oh man, you know, it just made me start thinking of, you know, it's like this week, you know, I mean, it's like she's been very combative with me and having attitude. And I'm like, I'm having to put, you know, like boundaries in place for this. I'm like, look, there's a different way to say it. I'm like, you don't have to come at me blaming me for something, but if you say it in a normal tone, you know, say it differently, you know, then that's okay. But you just can't come rushing at me saying, like, the world's going to end and you're getting defensive because nothing's happened to you. So, you know what I mean? So with this, with trying to listen to your heart, there's this fine balance with, you know, letting them, empowering them, being able to speak their mind, but also, you know, like here again, like you said, for a six-year-old, they still need to be able to, you know, like listen to, you know, like mom or dad. And so, so that seems really interesting to me. I'm like, how to, as a parent, still have them listen to their heart, but not, you know, to the point to where they're like always are combative and defensive.
No, Dr. Burns, that's a good point. And let's talk about the balance with that. Because if we use the analogy of a child, is that while we want the child, or we want someone's heart to be able to speak, you know, there's a difference between feelings and impulses. So, you know, impulses are really intense, and they say, if I don't do something right now, I'm going to die. Actually, you're not going to die. It just feels that way. And impulses will die down just over time. Feelings are things that usually have us do something, respond something. If I've done something bad to someone, I'm going to feel guilty, and I'm probably going to still feel guilty until I go apologize. But if I'm going through an impulse or something, really that isn't something that I need to have someone give me their undivided attention as much as I would like it. Sometimes, you know, I have small children, so we do this a lot. It's if it's really overwhelming, really upset, it's that, you can't say this if you're screaming at me. No, I want to hear you, but you have to slow down. And we go through this with them because they need to learn that you can feel stuff and listen to it, but you don't have to be at the mercy of your feelings. So, you know, if we're talking about listening to your heart, you know, another way to put it also is to take care of your heart. And sometimes taking care of it is being able to say to yourself, no, I need to do this in spite of how I feel. And sometimes it's about listening to it, where I need to tell someone, you know, I can't hear you if you're screaming at me. You know, I want to hear you, but it doesn't work for me. You know, I don't want to argue with you right now. And so if we're in that protective role of your heart, and as a woman especially, when a woman puts her heart first, no man is a match for you.
Wow. So then how, and so then listening to your heart actually brings up what you call the authentic self. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Yes, you know, when someone's authentic, it means that they're aware of their good parts and the parts they're still working on, and that they're at peace with where they're at right now. Now, the alternative to this is if someone, you know, is guarded and perhaps they're insecure or they're overly shy or something, and they work really hard so that no one knows that about them. So maybe they come across as overly confident, or maybe they come across as, you know, that they can never show any weakness. But authentic takes courage. I mean, it's not easy to do it. But when a woman is authentic, what that does is that emotional guard that she would normally have isn't necessary. Because she's taken a look inside, she knows what's wonderful about her. She knows what's weird about her or what's uncomfortable, because we all have some of that. And she's at peace with, I mean, not totally at peace, but she understands that, you know, these are things I need to work on. And I tell women a lot of times a relationship, you know, when they start dating someone, I said, this is my wish for you, is that, you know, let's just pick an issue. If you have someone has a temper or someone gets insecure, and they say, you know, sometimes I get a little insecure, but I'm working on that. But I'm always going to have a little bit of this. And but my promise to you is that I'll keep an eye on it. If I do it too much, sure, you can say something to me. Now, that takes courage to say something like that to a man. I mean, he could make fun of her. He could, you know, he could roll his eyes. The irony is that he most likely won't do that. And for a woman to say something like that, that comes across as extremely confident. It comes across as very appealing, and it's actually disarming to a man.
Okay. So how then would you say that as women, how did we end up from, you know, like a little girl to a grown-up? How do you think we lost being our authentic selves?
Yeah, Dr. That's a good point, because I have a lot of professional women that actually have that same thing you just described.
Mm-hmm.
If it wasn't modeled for a woman, you know, in fairness, you know, I think most parents do the best job they could, that what happens with a woman is that she learns that if she takes some risk and it hurts really bad, or she gets scolded or made fun of, and I don't necessarily mean just a single incident, it can be a series of things. What happens is she begins to learn to think or feel. You know, feeling becomes vulnerable. Feeling becomes like out of control at times. Perhaps she's accused of being needy or whiny, and she says, oh, I'm not going to do that again. So she makes it a point that I'm going to be in control. Not, I don't mean like crazy in control, but that she says, I'm not going to get labeled that again, because all of a sudden that didn't turn out well. And the problem is that what a lot of women do is they overcompensate with it. Because it's easier to think and try to regulate her feelings, to only let out, quote, the good ones.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that the way women are wired is that women are wired to think and feel simultaneously. I mean, I would argue that's one of the advantages that women have over men, that where that intuition comes from. But when she thinks or feels, what a lot of women I talk with do is they think most of the time, nothing wrong with that, but their best asset, their feelings, their emotions, their heart, they keep sort of in a box until they want to let it out when it's convenient. And the problem is it doesn't work like that. Is that when you let it out like that, it tends to come out, you know, in a big gush. There's a rush of feelings, and it floods a man, overwhelms him. And the irony of that is he says, oh, she's too emotional, whatever. Actually, that's not the problem. She's actually not emotional enough. What he's getting is the byproduct of all this buildup. And the solution a lot of times is, can I get you to take chances? Can I get you to be more in touch with your heart? It'll happen if you let it. But it'll probably feel a little unnerving when you first start doing that.
So then, as I know that it's like a lot of times when people aren't authentic, self-esteem, especially for teenage girls, plummets. I mean, it's like they, because of the whole like dating scene that's coming up, the socializing that happens in high school. And so a lot of them feel like that there is this model that they have to fit in order to belong to a certain group. And then the self-esteem goes down from there because they feel like that they can't be themselves. And then all of a sudden, then it's like, then when they grow up, it's like they're lost and they can't seem to remember like who they were, what they enjoyed doing, because they spent like 4 years in a critical period of time trying to be someone that they weren't. So how would you be able to grab those girls beforehand and to get them to be their authentic selves? And so then that way their self-esteem or self-worth is actually higher, so then that way they can choose better relationships, say like high school and later on.
I remember I used to work a lot with teenagers, and I would have some of the teenage girls, the parents would bring them. And I found with them that the conversations with them wasn't a lot different than it was for my clients in their, late 20s, early 30s, 40s. I mean, some of the circumstances were different, of course, but the goals and the dreams were still the same. And what I always focus on them is if I'm talking to them one-on-one, if I'm trying to reach a group of them, it's, I know what's in your heart, not because I'm telling you, just because I've heard this from so many women over the years, is that I know what you want is for someone to cherish you, someone to adore you, and I don't think that's just fairy tale. And that when you have a man that does that, what happens is that you'll actually end up making things better for him just because you're a girl. And it's not that you have to know how to do it. But having that core need met, that need of security, of where you feel that connection with him, that isn't just something that it would be nice to have, that it's critical. And any of the shortcuts you try to take, I'm not saying it's going to be easy to avoid those, but I'm thinking of one client in particular that was really similar to the circumstance you just mentioned. And she didn't have a lot of guidance from her parents. And so she just, she slept around, I don't know, 30 or 40 guys for 15 years from high school till I saw her when she was in her early 30s. And the loneliness that created the disconnect. And by the time she came to see me, that's when she, just it hit her just how empty it made her feel. Because, every time she'd do that, it's like she gave a piece of her heart to each guy. And that desire she had didn't go away. It didn't get masked with the stuff she was doing. And those short-term avenues, it's easy to fall into. I'll be the first to admit that. But that desire that I think every woman has in her heart, it doesn't go away until it gets fulfilled. And it's like a hunger, and it's like a drive's not the right word, but it's like something that calls out for completion. And so if I'm talking to them one-on-one, usually all I have to ask is, tell me what's in your heart, tell me what you really want. And as they start telling me, then I say, okay, this is how we go about doing it. This is how to get it. And every choice you make, you tell me, is this going to take you toward that, or is this going to take you farther away?
Interesting. So, how many, with the people that you've counseled over the years with this, how many of them, is like 90% of them coming in like feeling lost? Or, like, is there like some of them that come in just needing like a tweak here and there? Because it seems like more than not for like us as women that, most of the time through decisions that we made, it's like because, it's almost like we've lost respect for ourselves and that we can't be like true to ourselves and be honest and say what it is that we need to say.
Yeah, I think, I mean, sort of the dirty little secret is almost everyone comes in for a tweak. At least that's how they present it. And then once they get in there and we start talking, then they start to feel safer to actually talk about other things or things that led to it. Because it is, it's vulnerable to do that. That the ways, what I call them is called childhood coping skills. And it's the way all of us sort of learned how to deal with certain things, my boys that are really little, you know, 3 years old, their childhood coping skill when they get mad is to hit something. You know, that's okay for three. I mean, they get disciplined, but that's kind of normal for three. That's not normal at 30 years old. And so childhood coping skills, we want someone to outgrow them and replace them with adult coping skills, because the childhood ones are just too powerful. They keep you safe. They keep you guarded, but they don't open you up to a relationship. And if someone learned these childhood coping skills, I mean, we can go all the way from, you know, abuse, where they learn some really rigid and survival kind of skills, you know, to something that's less intense than that. When they get into a relationship or want to have one, they want that really bad, but those coping skills kick in, and, you know, they come across maybe as distant or aloof or guarded, and it's not that they're distant. They just don't know how to lower their guard and let someone come close, you know, for the fear is that I'll get hurt again or I'll get taken advantage of again. And so it's not what I tell clients a lot. I say it's not a stupid problem. I said it's your brain being clever. I mean, it's a problem, but it's a clever problem. That's why, you know, saying things like, you know, don't be so negative or just tough it up, clinically, that's just not good advice. So, I mean, the process we're talking about, going back to authentic, is it really is going to be about trying some stuff that most likely you just didn't see modeled for you with mom and dad, or you just had no one show you this. Just what you had said earlier, wow, I read this, and I thought, where has this been? You know, most people just don't hear about this. Most women don't hear about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So when women are out there and they are guarding themselves or they're trying to be vulnerable, what are some of the biggest mistakes that they can make, like in dating or in their marital relationships?
You know, for someone dating, what I tell women is I say that the biggest mistake I see is you allowing the relationship to go too fast, too soon. And that's not to put it all on women. I mean, absolutely the guys are the ones that are, you're trying to make it fast. And the reason being is because a lot of times, because they're guarded and all of a sudden here's this guy and it's really intense, it feels good. It feels so good to feel. These feelings feel so good, and it just seems like, oh, finally I found this connection. And they make the assumption that because it's really intense, that this is true, that this is more than it is. And the problem with that is they end up giving their heart too quickly, and it's not necessarily even that the guy was lying. It's that the relationship didn't have time to sort of build a foundation. I mean, that there's just no substitute for the time of it. You know, really just to get to know the other person. Because early on in the relationship, what our brain does is, you know, it just fills in the blanks. So a guy smiles, and it feels like he's so trustworthy, he's so kind. You know, maybe. Maybe not. Right now he is, because he really thinks you're pretty. That doesn't mean he's going to be that way indefinitely. And only time is going to tell us that. And in fact, what I tell women, especially in dating, is I say, the biggest thing that I'm concerned with, I say, is how does he treat you when he's angry? How does he treat you when he's bored? I don't expect him to give you flowers then. That'd be nice, but that's, I think, asking a lot. But does he try? Does he, just from his will alone, is he protective? Does he at least try to work it out with you? Does he refrain from losing his temper? That's a better measure as to how he's going to be as a husband than the kind of connection you have. And I understand the connection is wonderful. We want that. It's just that's not enough. So that's what I would say about folks that are single. And in marriage, well, I tell a lot of wives, as I say, remember when you were dating, you knew better than to leave it up to the guy you were dating, because it wasn't going to happen. If you just left it up to him, so you would at times encourage things. There was a way you'd flirt with him or a look, or you just knew how to move the relationship along, and you knew that because you're a woman. And a lot of times what wives do is they get married and they make the assumption that because they've said this to their husband, because, you know, she's committed him for life, he should just feel this romantic spark. You know, the irony for a lot of women is they, and I don't know that many have been told this, is that women are the initiators. I mean, women send that first signal. The men respond to it. We walk across the room, we buy flowers, we do push-ups, you know, look at my muscle. But we're doing that out of a response from the signal that a woman gives us. And when a woman stops sending those signals, it's not that it's all the woman's fault. It's just if I have to pick between the two, women are better at this. They're arguably more powerful, if I can use that word. They're the heart of the relationship. The women are going to be much more in tune toward starting that spark within the relationship than the man will be.
Okay. So how would then someone who's like dating or in a marital relationship, I guess my question is why do we as women miss some of the signals from the guys, you know, like the ones that are the, like some of the guys are like controlling, you know, like put women down, you know, like all that stuff. How do you feel that as we as women end up missing those signals, like during the dating stage?
Yeah, usually during the dating stage, there, you know, a guy's going to put his best foot forward. So what you're going to see, you know, he's going to make a presentation, you know, almost like a job interview. And in the process of that, if there's a good connection there, what happens is it usually feels so good that the assumption is a lot of women make is, okay, this is who he really is. And then some of those red flags come up, like you had mentioned, and the thinking goes, okay, that's not who he really is. That's just a bad habit, or that's whatever. And there's more weight that's put on this good stuff, and understandably so, because it feels good. And the others are just something that, well, they don't come up that often, or that's just a rare thing, or maybe it was something I did, so therefore I can control him not doing that if I just don't fill in the blank, I just don't interrupt him, or I just don't make him unhappy. And most of the time it's because, you know, especially early on in dating, if it goes too fast, too often, I mean, if we see each other too much too early, then that bonding thing takes place, I mean, which is good, but it's the emphasis on feelings, you know, because it feels so good, therefore I base everything on that, and I forget about the stuff that I know or that I see. You know, that the short version is going to be because someone's likely to lose their objectivity. I mean, and in fairness to women, I mean, men do this too.
Yeah, that's true. So, but what about for those that are now like in a relationship that's been going on, like married or in a relationship that's been going on for years, and they feel like they're stuck. I mean, there's some like a lot of good times, but then like if you say something wrong or you try to approach them about, you know, something that you're trying to be truthful about, and then they start like backlashing at you and getting upset and stuff like that, and you know, which is the authentic them. What would you say to women like that?
When you're saying that, there's this example that comes to mind, and it has to do with conflict, is that it is your job to maintain your value more so than your husband's. I mean he should do that. And I remember a therapist that told me this as an illustration, and they had been married like 20 years. I really liked their marriage. And he said one night they went out to dinner, and they were all dressed up, and I don't know what he said, but he said something smart. I mean, he wouldn't tell me what it was, but apparently, I don't know if he was teasing, but it was insulting. And they had just sat down. And he said his wife pushed her chair out, picked up the napkin, dabbed her mouth, put it on the plate, walked around, pushed the chair in, walked out, and called herself a cab home. He said the waiter came up and said, did she leave you? He says, yeah, she left me. He said he went home, and he knew. He said, his wife says, you owe me an apology. Because she was willing to outlast him for what he did. And now with that, it's not that you want to do that all the time, because it's hard to do what she did. And she had done this a number of times. But as a woman, when a man is what I call competitive or rude or ugly, that's when a woman does this. I mean, that may seem like an extreme example, but the man that told me that story, you should have seen the pride on his face when he told it. Because she was going to remind him, I am expensive, I am valuable, I do not argue with man. I don't argue with children, I don't argue with animals, and I don't argue with men. It is beneath her. and that's not ugly or arrogant to say that every man, well, I take that back. There's some men that just hate women, so those guys decide. But the men we're talking about in general like this about a woman. They're not always going to tell you in the moment. Because with men, there's a rule of thumb. If you can't handle me when I'm a pill, if you can't handle me when I'm ugly, I can't trust you when I'm scared. Because we know that sometimes we are pills. Sometimes we're rude, and we're pushy, and we're, you know, we're guys, and we have bad manners, and et cetera. That's what makes it safe for men to trust women, to see she can only handle herself. And it doesn't necessarily mean that she should, but just in there are going to be times where she does have to. And when a woman can do that, then we can have discussions about, you know, stuff that we disagree on or that we follow up on when she shares her heart. The rule is that, you know, as long as you're not aggressive, as long as you're not ugly with me, we can discuss stuff. But once you're inappropriate, then I will create distance, not to be ugly, but because you deserve a wife that's going to think this of herself. It's not just for her sake, it's also for his.
And so, I mean, with this, that kind of leads me to the next point, which is when you think is a good time in a relationship to be adaptive, and when do you think it's unhealthy for women to do that?
Yeah, it really depends sort of the stage. So as you mentioned, if we're talking about the, you know, when is and what part of it, you know, adaptive women are, I think, are naturally going to do that because women have a sense of, you know, when the relationship's going cold or when it's slowing down. And the rule of thumb is that if you're adapting with things that violate, you know, your conscience or violate things that you know that are wrong, that's actually called being codependent. That's enabling. So, you know, and it being adaptive is a good thing. It's just overusing it to get someone in trouble. So the degree that a man allows a woman to influence her, you know, so we can do the extremes. You know, after the first couple of dates, should she be very adaptive? I think she should be courteous, but she doesn't know the person well enough because to really adapt to someone, there's a certain level of trust that has to, you know, take place. You know, that for her just to kind of mold to the man, to kind of follow his lead, she can do that really to the degree that he's sort of invested in her. So as the relationship progresses and she understands that maybe sometimes he's more quiet than others, you know, sometimes he likes it when she talks, as long as she is giving less to him than he is giving to her, usually that works out pretty well. It's when a woman gives more to a man that we start to see trouble because she ends up taking on the male role by doing that. And women in general are good at giving. Mm-hmm. So if I'm telling a woman, I say, be careful and don't give too much, I'm not worried about a man thinking you'll be selfish. What I am most worried about is if he takes you for granted. Because once he starts doing that, that's what scares me.
Okay. So why? What happens whenever the man starts taking it for granted?
A number of things happen with that. It's she becomes less appealing in his eyes. She becomes casual. The commitments that he made, it's not that he shouldn't keep them, but there's less incentive for him. And I'm really primarily talking about in dating. This applies to marriage too, but I think dating is where this comes up more often. And in doing so, all of a sudden, the, you know, from a romance standpoint, the intensity starts to die down. You know, see, in dating, what I want, there's a rule of thumb is that in dating, tension is your friend. So we're not trying to pick fights to do it. But tension meaning he doesn't quite know that he has you. That if he doesn't get up off his rear end, that some other guy may snatch you up. And that's not necessarily game playing. It's that tension is what helps him realize that, you know, that I don't want to waste this opportunity here. And that taking for granted is where she's overly accommodating. She accepts an invitation at the last minute. Not that that's always bad. We just don't want to do that early on. Is that she changes her plans, you know, to accommodate him. And see, if she's doing that more than he is, he, after a while, the assumption is, okay, I don't really have to plan ahead. I don't really have to make as much of a sacrifice because she'll just make it work, which is what gets us more toward acting like a mother than a girlfriend or a wife.
Gotcha. Okay. So then, what do you think men really want in a relationship?
If there was one thing I could say, it would be that a man wants to know that he can make a woman happy. There's things that go with that. But when a man feels like that the woman is his choice, he can make her happy, he actually takes responsibility for that. I heard John Gray mention this one time, and it was a good point. He says, he'll take responsibility for your happiness. Because to do that makes him feel like he's more of a man, makes us feel bigger, stronger, more studly and stuff. Look what I did. It really is that I want to show off for you and make you happy. And with that in mind, what men like is sort of a cheat sheet. See, men don't like to, here's the thing that a lot of women don't know or and don't always like to hear. Men don't like drama like women do. We hate it. We like serenity. But women love the drama, the process. I mean, there's rarely going to be, I wouldn't think, a real house husband, show or something where the husbands argue and stuff, and it just doesn't appeal to men like it does to women, or at least to some women. But what men like is that, how can I make you happy, and without having to go through this huge emotional process to make you do that? And what happens is for women, it becomes important for them to know, what is it that makes you happy? I did a group one time of women, and there was one lady in there I remember, and she was really pretty and had a lot of guys date her over the years, and she wanted to get married. And one of the questions I asked the group members was, I said, what is it that makes you feel secure? Tell me a time when a guy did something that makes you feel secure, really. She couldn't tell us. And so because of that, every guy she dated, he could never make her feel that because she didn't know what it would be. And she hadn't really taken the time to think that through. And it's not that it's always going to be one thing. I mean, it's going to be different depending on the circumstances. But when a woman knows that, and a man does that thing, whatever, it's a romantic gesture or it's protective, and she responds with emotions, that makes me feel wonderful when you do that. I can't tell you how good that felt. Then inside a man's mind, he goes, oh, that works. I'll do that again. And that's what men, that their fantasy is that, is that, oh, I know the stuff to do, and I can do it to make her happy so that she will be pleased with me.
Okay. Now, what happens if, say, the marriage or the date is, or the dates are going well, but then it's like all of a sudden things turn, and the woman is finding that now that their husband or boyfriend or whoever it may be is like disrespecting her, like kind of like still going through the motions, but not really like engaging anymore. It's like the littlest thing that they do, like makes her husband or boyfriend, like upset. And so what should they do in that type of situation?
If they're upset, I'm assuming what you mean is that no matter how she brings it up, either he doesn't want to talk about it or he overreacts to her.
Yeah, so I mean, it's just like the relationship was going on great, and then it's like they ended up with a fight or something they disagreed with, and now from like here on out, he looks at her as this like mean person who they don't respect anymore because of like a couple of incidents, and she was trying to, and then now it's like all of a sudden he's like backing off and not really saying much and stuff like that.
Okay, in fairness, I'm going to make a generalization on this because I'm putting on my therapist cap. As a therapist, I'd want to know details about that incident and all. But I think in general, what I tell women is this. I say, I'm assuming that you did something that came across insulting to him. And in fairness to you, what you did might not have been that insulting, but he thinks it is. And for the sake of argument, is he acting like a child? I'll say sure. I mean, I'll just assume those things. So if that's the thing, we can point it out, okay, I'm right or you're right, but like you were saying, I don't really think that's someone's goal, but we're kind of past that. I just want this resolved. So should this be where two adults sit down and kind of work it out? That's how it should work. That would be the fair thing. If one person, especially the man's, not willing to do that because he's sticking his head in the sand, sulking, pouting, whatever, then it's going to end up being the woman that approaches him. I mean, it doesn't have to be, but someone's going to have to. So she's asking me, I'm addressing this to her. And what I ask her is, I say, you know, during that argument, I'm assuming there's something in that discussion that you probably wish you could have done different. Maybe you shouldn't have raised your voice, or maybe you shouldn't have called him a name, or there's something. And usually they'll mention something. I could have done this different. I said, how about let's start with going and apologizing to him for that. Not for everything, for that. And all I'm trying to do is I'm trying to make it in a way, not that it's all your fault, or even most your fault, but to start with, it's a way of coming across as humble, not humble, I'm wrong, you're right, but you know, I shouldn't have done this part. Because in approaching a man that way, what that usually does is it lowers his guard. And if it doesn't lower his guard, then what we're looking at is he's just in the mood to punish you. And if he's just in the mood to punish you, I need you to pull back and leave him alone. Because if he's sulking like that, that's almost like a child having a temper tantrum. And I'm saying this as a man. So I know guys can do this. And when someone's having a temper tantrum, I know you don't want to leave them alone. And I know that's not your preference. I know you want to just talk and get this done with. But he's having a temper tantrum. He's not going to let you do that, even though he should. And I don't know how long he's going to do, how long he's going to hold his breath, stick his thumb in his mouth. I don't know. But you have to outlast a temper tantrum. I'd love to give you something magical, but if you've been around small children, you know that doesn't work. They're going to get done with it when they get done. And then the course of that is that once he realizes that sulking doesn't work, that's when guys stop doing it. And it's not easy to do this. It's easy for me to describe it. It's not easy to outlast a man that's doing this. But if we do it correctly, a woman should only have to do it a few times. And I've told a lot of women, you know, I don't argue with my wife anymore because in the first year of marriage, she trained me that it was a waste of my time. Just because she would just leave the room. And it was frustrating, but I learned really quick, you know, that doesn't work. I'm going to have to come up a different way when I disagree with her.
Well, that's good. And did it take you a while to learn a different way?
You know, I would like to think that I'm highly intelligent, and but it still took me 6 months. Yeah, because it's not like we practice this every day. It just happens randomly. Mm-hmm. And in the moment, and this is what happens with men, in the moment when we argue, we don't feel a lot of times. So whenever a man feels, we tend to feel really intensely. So, like, you know, that's why when they want sex, we want it really bad right now. When we get angry, we tend to get really angry, really intense. When we go to a sporting event, I mean, it goes from 0 to 60. That's just what happens with us, with our emotions. So when we're in an argument, it feels like, you know, one of us has to win. And because I'm not screaming, I think I'm being, you know, very respectful right now. But, you know, my tone can still come across as intimidating. And so the woman's response to that is how a man realizes, oop, that was a little too strong, or I shouldn't have done this. And that response, given enough time, that's how I did, and I've seen a number of husbands that have learned this to their wives, you know, that doesn't work with her. It doesn't matter that I'm not yelling. This doesn't work with her. And every wife has certain things that work and don't work. You know, some wives don't mind if a guy raises his voice some. Some women can't stand it. And that's her job to enforce that. And she does that, going back to arguing's beneath her, and it's got to feel safe. We can argue and discuss anything, but once I feel unsafe, or once it feels intimidating, or once we're not going to continue, so we'll pick it up later. So 6 months is how long it took me. I don't know that I'm proud of that, but it did take me 6 months.
Oh, yes. So now I know that one thing that men don't like is when women nag. So what would you say a man's definition of nagging is, and what approach could women give? Because I know you were talking about that in your book, that about like the whole nagging thing.
Yes. In general, what men think nagging is when a woman asks the same question just in different ways. And so, as though asking it differently is going to get a different answer. And usually what nagging comes from, is, in fairness to women, is this, is when a woman tolerates a certain behavior. I mean, there's accepting it, and there's rejecting it, and there's tolerating. And tolerating is the worst. It's because I'm just going to keep reminding someone, and hopefully if I remind them or point it out enough, it'll change. And what we want to do is to get that in one category or another. So if what he's doing or not doing, if it's critical that he does it, then we have to put it in the reject category, which means we have to do whatever it takes to get his attention. I mean, an obvious example would be like if a guy was violent throwing furniture. You know, whatever we got to do, even if that means calling the police, we've got to do that, especially if there are kids in the house. It's just not an option. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I will do whatever it takes for this behavior to stop. Most things are not worth going to that kind of extreme. Therefore, most things we accept. But putting it in one of those two categories means that, so when a woman says to me, how do I know if I'm being too picky or too whiny? I say, tell me what you're willing to enforce. Tell me how important this is for you to enforce it every, you know, all the way. You know, if your husband decides, I just don't think I want to work anymore. See, I think that one's worth enforcing. Whatever you got to do to get his attention, if that means you don't shop and you don't buy, you know, you don't buy groceries and he just goes hungry and stuff, that may seem extreme, but I'm willing to go all the way with that one. If he doesn't, if he doesn't straighten the coats up in the closet, I don't know that you're willing to go all the way with that one. It'd be nice if he did, but I don't think you're willing to enforce that one all the way. So that's usually the rule of thumb I give them. Is it doesn't matter what things you pick. Tell me the ones you want to do whatever it takes to enforce. That'll give you an idea of what things are critical. All the others.
Gotcha. So do you think for a woman, should they pick and choose what to battle and what not to battle then? Or should they, with everything that they don't like say not picking up, like the coat's not being picked up. So is there a fine line on battle?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good example about the coats being picked up because, in fairness, that's not something we'd probably want to take to the extreme. And yet, the problem with something like that is that, now I'm generalizing, I know when I say this, a lot of times, like in that instance, women are going to see things that men don't. They're going to have different priorities. It's not that men don't see the coat laying on the sofa. It's that they see the coat laying on the sofa and think that somehow magically it'll hang itself up within a day. Women look at the coat and say, oh my gosh, that's something I've got to do. So a lot of times the woman says, I say, he doesn't see it. I'm not saying it's an excuse for him to be a slob. But he's not going to see things. If we take him into a room and say, is this room neat? He'd probably say, yeah, it's neat. She'd go, what? Neat? She'd point all these things she would see. I'd say, so if you want him to do something like that, I said, it's going to take a lot of repetition for him to see it, not because it comes as natural to him as it does you, but because he's going to have to do it just because you want him to. And that's not a bad reason. It's just pointing it out to him doesn't mean he's going to suddenly start noticing stuff. And so even that process I'm mentioning there, for some women I know, I'm just picking the one on picking stuff up, like my mother was like that. Just, you know, everything was clean and orderly and stuff. It would drive her crazy if it wasn't clean and orderly. That was worth her reminding my father and her sons to clean up all the time. You know, and just for some women that isn't going to be something that's as big a deal. So that's why if I go back to tell me what it's worth to enforce, that ends up being each woman uniquely can kind of prioritize what things are that important.
Oh, come on. Bars. Hello?
Up here.
Hello and welcome to Here's to Your Health with Dr. Burns. I am Dr. Burns and I have with me from Kitty Corner, I have Elsa. And Elsa wants to talk a little bit about exercise. So Elsa, is exercise supposed to be fun?
Yeah.
Okay, what type of exercise do you do?
I just do ballet, but somehow I don't. But somehow I'm alone like 2 days because Kelly isn't at my.
Okay, so do you like to dance?
Yeah.
Is dance a good exercise?
Yeah, but I usually dance with the 12 dancing princesses.
Okay, so yes, you can dance to music or to videos. They got videos out so that you can dance to. What other types of exercise are there for kids that are fun? How about, like, is bike riding fun? No, come here. I'm recording right now. Is bike riding fun?
Yeah.
So running. What about, yeah, running's fun too. What about swimming?
Yeah.
Okay, and what about jumping? Is that fun too? Yes? So are those all the things that we can do to stay healthy and to exercise?
Yes.
Okay, are we supposed to exercise every day?
Yes.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you very much, Elsa, for joining us on our show.
All right, we're back from break. Bob, it's been great having you on our show. It's been a very informative and insightful. And so before we leave, is there anything else you'd like to say?
Well, thanks, Dr. Burns. I've enjoyed being here. And for everyone listening, and I know with the approach that you take, that, you know, the best part is that however a woman's learned to do things, is that not only can be changed, but just by doing some things differently, just by experimenting, a lot of times it doesn't take a lot of things to have to change. Most of the time it's just one or two things. And the experimenting part is, it's just we don't always know which of those things it is. And so, you know, for every woman listening, it's your willingness to experiment, to try some new things, you know, just to think about putting your heart first, is that. And in doing so, what you'll find is that men are naturally open to that. I mean, that they find themselves not only drawn to this type of woman, but that's the type of woman men say there's something about her. And so I like the questions you were asking. I know a lot of women I've talked with have asked things really similar to that. And it's just been a pleasure being here.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. And we'll see you later.